And it's my pleasure to call now Myriam Merad for the next talk. So Myriad is a professor of cancer immunology at the Mount Sinai Medical School in New York City. And I think to continue on myeloid cells and discuss myeloid cells in the context of cancer, there is nobody else we could thought to invite to talk about it. So your title is Myeloid Cell Control and Anti-Tumor Immunity.
Right, well, thank you very much, Alain and Hugues, for the invitation to lecture here today. I'm very honored to be in this historical place. In fact, my mother was very proud of me, so thank you also for this. I'd like to congratulate also my French colleague for the results of the presidential election. We were quite scared about what was going to happen. I will also, however, urge you not to underestimate the really destructive power of this populist movement, because even when they are in, and even if they are kicked out quite fast, they have very long-lasting damage in society, as we are seeing now in the US. So keep fighting, especially the young generation. Use your data-driven mind and make sure they never come into power, because they stand against everything the Collège de France stands for. So today I'll be talking about myeloid program that modulate tumor immunity. But before, I'd like to really emphasize really this I think realization that came in this recent decade that really immune cells are part of all human disease lesions. And they probably contribute to modulating the outcome of disease beyond, you know, the one that are driven by dysregulation of the immune system, such as autoimmunity or inflammatory disease. So we know that this inflammatory component plays a very key role, for example, in atherosclerosis or myocardial infarction or metabolic syndrome, but also during aging. And really the biggest revolution, I would say, in the last decade is the realization that drugging the immune system can be curative. And we've seen that, for example, of course, with vaccines that stop the pandemics, but also with this checkpoint blockade that are transforming the outcome of advanced cancer disease, as I'm going to talk about today. And also this explosion of anti-cytokine blockade that are modulating the outcome of many diseases beyond inflammatory bowel disease and rheumatoid arthritis. And really, I think it's possible now to really group the disease into most human disease into these two groups, those that are associated with an overactivation of the immune system and those that are associated with a suppression of the immune system. And the cancer would be in this group where the immune system or the immune response is really dampened. So the moonshot challenge, I believe, in the years to come is really to learn how to control harmful inflammation without compromising the immune systems to fight pathogen and eliminate tumor. And specifically for our purpose today in cancer is to learn how to enhance tumor immunity without inducing harmful inflammation. And to do that, it's going to be very important to map the cellular and molecular program that are responsible for this immune imbalance, right, that is present in most human lesions, and understand how this program responds to treatment can really and transform our understanding both of disease pathophysiology, but also enhance our drug discovery effort. So really, to fill this gap of knowledge, we build a human experimental platform, which we now call the Neoadjuvant Research Group to evaluate therapeutics or target, which is a multidisciplinary group where we bring cancer immunologists, we surgical oncologists, pathologists, and interventional radiologists and radiologists. And this group really identify the lesions that needs to be really mapped using this explosion of technology that Ido introduced for us today, and which coalesced in a platform that I founded in more than 10 years ago, and I now co-lead with my colleague Sasha Niatic. And together we really identify relevant tissue pipeline that can be mapped, and relevant technology to map really this complexity of the complex immune network that is present in disease lesions. So we are, this immune monitoring platform is now part of a Cancer Moonshot initiative, which is funded by the NCI, to monitor, in fact, immunotherapy trials or combination trials. So it's funded by this Cancer Moonshot through the NCI, but recently there is a big consortium of industry that is now matching the NCI fund. So it's a great tool that we need to embrace, really, to build this type of framework, which I realize is very similar to what Ido introduced, which is really learn as much as possible from patients, but then in order to build hypothesis, and the hypothesis would need to be probed, of course, at an experimental model, whether it is animal models or organoid or ex vivo type of studies. And then the idea is to probe the pathway in this model, but then go back to the patients and use again this ability to map the lesions and do this in an iterative manner. And this is what we call this adaptive clinical trial platform, which is really a new way of doing medicine, and this can be done on a small scale in patients, so that we can de-risk these large phase 3 trials, which we know fail in excess, in fact, and at an enormous cost burden for the pharmaceutical industry, but also for patients. All right, so now I'm going to give an example of a study that we've done recently. These are unpublished studies where we leveraged a neoadjuvant. Maybe I didn't emphasize so much that the neoadjuvant research group, I should have emphasized that the goal is to really harness the pre-surgical setting, so a setting where we will study lesions prior to surgery and use that type of that setting, the disease setting, to really map molecular response to treatment. And that allows us to really reduce confounding variable because the lesions are treatment naive, so they have not been bombarded with treatment. But also maximize tissue access because we will have access to surgical lesions and after exposure to defined period of treatment. So this is what this target focuses on this pre-surgical setting. And here we leverage a neoadjuvant trial that we've done recently on patients with early hepatocellular carcinoma that were treated with two doses of PD-1 blockade. This PD-1 blockade was made by Regeneron. They said it's funded by Regeneron. In fact, it would have not been possible to be done even with all this funding from the NCI because really mapping extensively these lesions is extremely costly. So the pharma needs to step up. In fact, they have been stepping up, you know, quite significantly, and I'd like to thank them for that. So this is a study where we received two PD-1 blockade made by Regeneron. It's called Cemiplimab, and tissue are collected prior and after two doses of PD-1 blockade, and profiled with different technologies that I will introduce. This study, the trial was published recently. With quite good response rate. HCC is a very serious disease, and all of the treatment have never exceeded something like between 5 to 7% response rate. Here we, in this very small cohort of patients, the response is measured at the histological level, so it's unclear how it correlates with clinical responses, but at the histological level, 30%, approximately 30%, a third of the patients responded to these two doses of PD-1 blockade. And this enables us then to compare, in fact, the molecular pathway that are associated with response and those that are associated with resistance to treatment. And this study was done by two fantastic postdoctoral fellows in my lab, Asaf Majen, who is a computational biologist, and Pauline Hamon, a French student who was trained in Institut Gustave Roussy, in La Pitié, then Institut Gustave Roussy, Pauline Hamon. All right, so the first things we've done is to look at the T-cell infiltration pattern in these tumor lesions. And we thought the HCC is really the prototype of inflammation-driven cancer. So we thought that most of the lesions will be really heavily infiltrated with T-cells, and this was not the case. In fact, we identified the three patterns that were described in many tumors, including melanoma lesions, where we see a group of tumors that are heavily enriched with T-cells, some where T-cells are excluded and they are stuck in this stromal compartment, and some lesions that are really depleted of T-cells. Okay, so then we've looked at how these, you know, stratified according to response to PD-1 blockade. And what we saw is that while all responders were enriched with T-cell, there was a large subset of non-responders that were also quite what people call inflamed. I'm not sure it's a good term, because inflamed means immune cells, where here we really refer to T-cells. A large subset of T-cell rich lesions also failed to respond to PD-1 blockade. You can see this here. Although the number of T-cells seems to be high in the responders, high number of T-cells were also infiltrating the non-responsive lesions. So now, because the immunological mechanism that leads to these different T-cell patterns is distinct, what we decided to do is to really focus on these T-cell rich lesions and understand why some patients will respond to treatment and some do not. Okay, so first I'm showing you here that that the tumor mutation burden, in fact just the burden, so the quantity of mutation didn't seem to differ between responders and non-responders. There are no major differences. There is a difference in potentially in some of on the type of mutations. There is, for example, an accumulation of this beta-catenin activating mutation in the T-cell low lesions that fail to respond to treatment, as was shown, in fact, in melanoma patients and other tumors. That was quite clear. There is also an abundance of P53 mutation in the T-cell-rich responders, and this is something we are seeing also in lung cancer lesions. But otherwise, in terms of burden, there is no big difference across responder and non-responders. When we now look at the clonal expansion of T-cells, now I'm going to focus on T-cell rich responder and non-responders. There is in both cases quite a good clonal expansion of T-cells, although the expansion is higher in responders compared to the T-cell rich non-responders, and of course compared to the lower excluded lesions. So now we look at we are going to look at the phenotype of these T cells that expand in these patients, and the first things we did is look at the phenotype of the T cells that are present in the tumor lesions compared to the adjacent tissue. Forget about response for a minute here. And what we saw is that there is an accumulation, as was shown in many other studies, of PD-1 high T cells in the tumor. So suggesting that this PD-1 pathway is really driven by tumor cues. This is what you are seeing here, the PD-1 high accumulate in the tumor compared to the adjacent tissue. And we saw four different programs that are accumulate within this PD-1 high compartment, which include a program that is in line with this terminally exhausted program, which include high level of TOX, PD-1, CTLA-4, and low level of cytotoxic genes. There is a program that is associated with or have been described as progenitor exhausted, which are also called TPEX, to express high level of TCF7 and XCL1. Program of proliferating T cells expressing high level of Ki-67 and effector T cell program with high level of granzyme and low level of TOX. So now we are going to look at how these programs stratify across responses, and what we saw. I did something not so good here. And what we saw is that there was really an abundance of effector T cells in the responders, compared to non-responders, even non-responder-rich, T-cell-rich lesions. Right? This is really dominate in the responder patients. Then we look at now CD4, the CD4 T-cell compartment. Sorry, did I mention that this was CD8? This is mostly CD8 T-cells, right? So now we are going to look at the CD4 T-cell compartment. Should I mention that this is single-cell sequencing? I don't even have to mention these people now. It's a commodity now, the single-cell profiling. All right, so now I'm going to focus on CD4. And when we look at CD4 program, we also do the same thing. First, we look at what accumulate in the tumor compared to adjacent tissue. And what we saw is that these T cells with T follicular helper features accumulate quite significantly in the tumor compared to adjacent. And these cells express high level of PD-1, but also high level of CXCL13, as introduced by Ido a minute ago, high level of IL-21, high level of ICOS, CD200, and IL-6 signal transducing pathway. So this suggests that it has some type of follicular helper program. There are other features that I'll get back to by the end of the talk, including this expression of the succisterol gradients, or CH25H, which was shown to play a key role in organizing organizing cells in lymphoid organs. All right, so now we are going to look at how this program, so here I showed you there are, of course, many other programs, including some Th1 or Th17 T cells, and we are looking at how these programs stratify across across responders and non-responders. And what we saw is that the program that dominates in responders is this TFH or CXCL13 T helper cells. You know, we hesitate in how to call them, so and we are going to call them CXCL13. Positive cells accumulate in responders compared to non-responders, whether in the non-responder T-cell rich, there is maybe a domination of T-reg. Definitely, in terms of ratio, there are much more T-regs versus TFH in the T-cell rich compared to the T-cell rich responders. So these are the two compartments that really accumulate in the responder and non-responders. Now, when we look at this program, which was very, very unique and very crisp, this TFH program, we've looked whether it's present in other tumor data sets that we generated in the lab or that were publicly available, and we see this program, you know, present across many tumors. So it seems that these TFH-like cells are really accumulate at the tumor site across many tumor lesions. So next, we looked at whether these effector T cells also correlate with the TFH. Indeed, there was a very strong correlation, not surprisingly, of these TFH cells, TFH-like cells, and CD8 effector T cells. They correlate, and of course, they correlate even more so in responder patients. So these are the two programs of T cells that dominate the tumor lesions in responder patients. Now, when we look at whether this program, you know, they were clonally expanded, so here we use single-cell TCR sequencing, and here we sequence more than 1 million T-cells, and this is why I was mentioning the importance of pharmaceutical industry funding, because these are very, very expensive studies. What we see is that indeed, you know, both in this effector and TFH-like program, there is significant clonal expansion, and there is clonal expansion, you can see it here, both in responder and non-responder. However, the clone size in responders was somehow higher, but there is still some expansion also in the non-responders. So now we are going to focus on this TCR as a molecular barcode to really look at the type of molecular program within one antigen-specific T-cell compartment, now at the tumor site, and when we gate on this TCR, so here we are going to gate on each bar, it is a clone, and we are going to look at the type of program. I'm just looking at the tumor site here. We look at the program that accumulate within one clone, and what we saw is that there is often this four program within one clone at the tumor site, suggesting that there was these progenitors proliferating, effector T cells, internally different T cells, suggesting that there was this differentiation occurred likely locally, right, at the tumor site. Now, when you look at the trajectory of differentiation in responder and non-responder, you can see that here there is an enrichment of terminally differentiated cells, which we believe are not very good at killing tumor cells, whereas here there is an accumulation of effector T cells, which are probably quite potent at eliminating tumor cells. But there is something, another interesting point here is that we also saw that there was these progenitor T cells in the non-responder lesions. And that was a little bit surprising to us because it's been suggested that that the lack of response is maybe due to the lack of progenitor T cells. These progenitor T cells are not present in the lesions, and indeed, in fact, they are. They are here, but it seems that they are not really differentiating properly. Okay, so then we were quite intrigued about the fact that these T cells were probably proliferating, you know, at the tumor site, because we saw this differentiation trajectory at the tumor lesion. So what we did is we then designed probes to stain for the TCR of the most abundant T cell clones, you know, after treatment. And we've designed several probes for CD8 TCR clone or CD4 clones. And then we went back, and this is what I'm showing you here. These are the clones post-treatment of CD8 and CD4s. And then we looked for them prior to treatment. And what we saw is that all these clones were in fact present already prior to treatment. They were sparse, but they were there. And so that was, again, suggesting that there was much local proliferation and there was reactivation at the tumor site. Then what we also did is we then used bulk seq. The problem with tissue prior to treatment is we have very little access to tissue. And this is something that we need to think about, at least with our interventional radiology colleagues. How can we really expand this culture of biopsy, you know, in HCC in particular, because the diagnosis is made by imaging. So there is no need for a biopsy, and it's done only in the context of clinical trials. And patients can refuse, in fact, to undergo tumor biopsy. So it was very difficult to obtain material prior to treatment. And you had access to very little, small piece of material, because then you have to negotiate with pathologists, you know, access to tissue. So despite that, what we found when we use bulk seq and now look at, you know, just a beta chain, right, this just comparing this clone, the presence of clone, not at the sequence level, in prior and post-treatment, what we saw is that 75% of the clones that we identified post-treatment were already present prior to treatment at the tumor site. When we look at the clones present in the tumor versus blood, or tumor versus lymph node, there was much less matching between the two compartments. And when we done this what we call this Gini index, to really look at the expansion of clone pre-post-treatment at the tumor site or post-treatment between the tumor versus lymph node or tumor versus blood, what we saw is that the biggest difference between responder and non-responders is the ability to expand T cells at the tumor site and not really in the lymph node. There are probably many caveats for this, but I just wanted to brainstorm these results with you. So it seems that really this ability to reactivate locally is correlate with response to checkpoint blockade. So what I've showed you is that at least many T cells expand locally upon exposure to PD-1 blockade. And this really prompted our search for local cues that really promote the expansion of these effector T cells in responders. So this is when I'm going to talk about myeloid cells. So we've been studying myeloid cells also for many years with a strong focus on dendritic cells and macrophages, which are really the two myeloid compartments that educate T cell response. Right? T cells cannot respond without being educated by this APC compartment that will instruct their effector or regulatory program. Now, we have shown that dendritic cells, there is several subsets of disease, and in normal tissue, in the absence of inflammation, this is the lineage of dendritic cells that dominate, which are called conventional dendritic cells. They derive from DC-restricted precursors that originate in the bone marrow. There is two subsets of DC, DC1 and 2. This compartment particular seems to be quite potent at cross-presentation. It cross-present extracellular material and has our focus on this subset of dendritic cells in tumor immunity or antiviral immunity, which is the only compartment that really can cross-present either virally infected cells or tumor cells, T-cell-associated antigen to T cells. And then there is another compartment of DC that DC like cells, we argue, that derive from these monocyte cells that really are mobilized mostly in inflamed lesions. So recently we showed that these dendritic cells, mostly DC1 and DC2, which have been shown to be very potent at priming, in fact, antigen-specific T cells, we showed that these dendritic cells undergo a molecular state when they potentially capture a cell-associated antigen. And they undergo these molecular transformations, which we called MREG. So this is what I'm showing you here. We found that dendritic cells, both DC1 and DC2, upon capture of cell-associated antigen. Here we profiled at the single cell level cells that have captured tumor antigen. This was done in the mouse, but also in human. And we look at the molecular program that is associated upon capture of cell-associated material. And what what we saw is that these diseases undergo a maturation process that leads to a very strong upregulation of maturation molecules that are very potent at activating a T-cell program, but also very strong upregulation of regulatory molecules with a very high expression of PD-L1 and PD-L2. Very high expression of the SOX protein that limit, in fact, cytokine signaling, high upregulation of migratory molecule, including expression of CCR7 and fascin, but also strong downregulation of toll-like receptor, as if when the cells eat, they need to stop sensing damage anymore. What's interesting is that while they upregulate this toll-like receptor, they also downregulate toll-like receptor, they also downregulate antigen receptor, they also upregulate FAS, and FAS is the best way for dendritic cells to die. They usually through this FAS vegan induced pathway, and the signal of death is really provided by activated T cells, and usually this is much stronger when they really engage at the antigen specific level. So this is a program that suggests this is a program where DC is interacting with T cells, right? And by focusing on this program, it's important to really potentially probe the pathway that are most relevant for T cell regulation or T cell activation. So we call these cells MREG. These names can change for maturation and regulatory enriched dendritic cells. And we've looked for this program in many tumor lesions. And in fact, this same program, we described it in lung tissue a few years ago, but was also described recently in HCC lesions, which is the focus of my talk today, by Zeming Zen. He called them LAMP3 positive DC, because this LAMP3, which in fact quite used by pathologists to look for activated DC for a long time, these LAMP3 are really most abundant in this program. It really suggests that this is redefining this very mature DC that have captured an antigen cargo. So we also looked for this program in many tumors, and in fact, the same program exists in most of the tumor you look at, suggesting that in this tumor, DC are indeed constantly taking this tumor antigen. But the reason why I suggest it's important to look at it is by looking at this, you reduce the diversion of other DC programs, and you start focusing on these programs that are interacting with T cells. So we also used recently this Visium technology, which is developed also by 10x, to capture mRNA at the spatial level. And then we projected this MREG program at the tumor site to look at the spatial distribution of this MREG molecular compartment. Molecular that define that active dendritic cells compartment. So here the tumor was annotated by a pathologist because we cannot obtain single cell resolution. So the pathologist is going to annotate the different region of the tumor. So for example, this is a tertiary lymphoid structure, which are lymphoid aggregates that are often present. This is an HCC lesion, so quite common in HCC lesions. Also, this is the tumor compartment or the stromal compartment. Then we are going to look at where this MREG program dominates, and what we saw is that this MREG seems to dominate in the core of the tertiary lymphoid structure, in association with this activated B cell compartment and activated T cells. And the MREG seems to be really de-enriched in the rest of the tumor lesion. So it suggests that really it is associated it is abundant in this lymphoid aggregate. Now, together with, we had two slides in common, Ido, today, the program and this slide. And this is a beautiful study that we've done in collaboration with the Ido Amitz group through this extraordinary fellow, Merav Cohen, who developed, while in Ido's lab, this technology of sequencing physically interacting cells. So the question we ask with Merav and Ido is, if indeed this MREG program are engaged with T cells, can we use this physically interacting cell seq method to really understand the program of DCs that are interacting with T cells at the tumor site. So this study was done on human non-small cell lung cancer lesions, where Merav, in my lab, used this slide digestion method that she developed in Ido's lab, purify now doublet cells, so specifically DC interacting with T cells, and then brought them to the MARSIC platform and sequenced them in Ido's group. And what we saw indeed, as Ido mentioned, is that first the DC that we're interacting with T cells, where it is indeed in this MREG state. So they are DC when interacting with T cells had this molecular program. But what we also saw is that the T cells that were interacting with MREG were in this state that I described earlier. They had very similar program, these TFH-like cells that we saw dominating in the responder patients. So now we are trying to do the same study in HCC, quite difficult to do it in the context of a clinical trial, I have to say, because to do this fact sorting, we need to fact sort these doublet cells. You need to use a lot of material, and that's not always easy because we have to use material for many other assays. But it seems that we probably are obtaining the same results. So first, when we look at untreated lesions, we see indeed that in this physically interacting cell, there is a domination of this MREG program and TFH-like cells in HCC lesions. Now, we've done one responder and one non-responder. And in this responder, there is also it seems that there is a higher number of MREG interacting with TFH-like cells, whereas in the non-responder, we didn't see an enrichment of these doublet cells. So that was quite exciting to us. So we went back now and used multiplex imaging to see whether we can identify these niches of MREG interacting with TFH cells. And what we saw was really quite fascinating. So what we saw is that there was indeed niches in these lesions, but in this niche of MREG, so MREG now is characterized by this molecule, DC-LAMP or LAMP3, DC-LAMP is the protein that's coded by LAMP3 gene, and these DC-LAMP positive cells accumulate close to the CXCL13 positive T cells, but we also saw the presence of these TCF1 CD8 T cells. Now, these are the progenitor T cells that were shown to be important for that respond the most to PD-1 blockade. So in this niche, what we saw is progenitor T cells, TFH-like cells, and the MREG cells. So then we went back and tried to really see whether these T cells were indeed also expressing IL-21 and this oxysterol gradient that we became very interested in. So here we use FISH or RNA FISH, where we designed the probe for IL-21 and TH25 and look whether in this niche these T cells were producing this molecule, and indeed there was an abundance of IL-21 and TH25H in this niche that I just described to you. And then we've done what we call proximity analysis, and this is quite blurry. So what we see is like the proximity of this DC, MREG DC with different programs, and what we saw is that this MREG indeed were close to progenitor CD8 were close to progenitor CD8 and these TFH-like cells. We then look whether they were close to effector T cells, but what we found is that it seems that the effector T cells are not accumulating in this niche. In fact, they are leaving the niche and probably going and invading the tumor lesions. And this is what we see here, is that in the responder, there is a proximity with progenitor CD8. There is no proximity with the effector. The effectors are leaving the niche and probably going to their tumor target. So then we've used this receptor ligand analysis to understand the type of program that may be responsible for building this niche or potentially also instructing this T-cell program. And I have to say, in this niche, there is very interesting molecule. So for companies that are interested in modulating, activating regular pathway, this is a very interesting list of genes to focus on. So for example, we saw that this MREG DC express very high level of T-cell molecule, T-cell chemokine. I may have to stop now. Alain, you stop me if I'm too long. including chemokine that recruits CXCL3 T-cells, but also a lot of molecules that recruit all the CCR4 positive T-cells. You know, so this MREG DC express very high level of 17 and 22. In fact, we saw it in the mouse. It's the same in human. It's the same everywhere they are. So 17, 22, which are the ligand for CCR4, but also express very high level of CCL19, which recruit CCR7 expressed on both naive, but also central memory T-cells. They also express very high level of co-stimulatory molecule, including this PVR and PVRL2, which is now quite exciting for the field. because they engage this molecule called CD226, which is inhibited by TIGIT, which seems to also be a very strong activator of T-cell effector program. But they also express very high level of inhibitory molecules. So PD-L1 and PD-L2 and many other, in fact, regulatory molecules are abundant in this MREG program because there is always this balance of regulating when you activate when you activate any immune cells, in fact. And what we saw also that these DCs express also very important cytokines for T-cell activation. So they express IL-15. They express also IL-12. And this is, I think, my last set of molecules showing that the TFH are also expressing the CD40 ligand. CD40 ligand, which is important for licensing DC and making them potent at activating the CD8 response. They express the oxysterol, which was shown by Jason Sister and Ron German to be important in organizing DC in lymphoid organs. And they express also high level of IL-21 and interferon gamma, IL-21, which we think is also quite important for activating the CD8 effector program. So with this, I think we believe that in fact this organization, this niche, formed by this cellular triad that include DC in this MREG state and interacting with CD4 T cells are going to be very important to promote potentially the survival of progenitor CD8 T cells. So we think that this is really what potentially happening is that this needs to allow these progenitors to survive so that they can now receive a checkpoint blockade and differentiate following proper cues to this effector T cell program. Now in non-responders, however, it seems that the progenitors are probably there, so priming occurred, they were recruited there, but they are either not seeing the proper cues to differentiate, and they will differentiate mostly in exhausted T cells, or they cannot differentiate. Now, what we don't know is how they are surviving, what are the program that enable them to survive. This is something that we are looking at right now. I'm not going to summarize this because I see Alan being anxious that I finish this talk. This is my group, engaged in our vaccine campaign. I read this quote because quote that we cherish very much. And this is all the people who contributed to this work. I'd like to acknowledge all my clinical collaborators and all our collaborators from Regeneron who really collaborated fully with us throughout this study. So thank you very much.